I think that was about, what, 3.5 months? Was that
3.5 months, yeah.
Could you tell us something about your experiences there? What kind of procedures did they, of course, did they put you through?
Well, they put you through a very rigorous course. It's a course in reading that's far and beyond what any single person could, at least the average reader, could accomplish. And, of course, it was all case studies, including some cases, some Dow cases, which I had a chance to elaborate on during the course. But it was a very intensive program with a lot of interaction between the profs and the students. And
how many students were there?
My recollection is 160.
Oh, really? Not many.
I may be wrong by a factor of two there. Let's see now. Well, it must have been about 80 in class. Two classes. 140 or 150, something like that. It was a good-sized group. I hope I'm not wrong about that, but I think I'm right.
Well, at least it's not a... I was thinking it more in terms of a very small number.
Oh, no. It's not a real small number. It's a good-sized number, and, of course, these fellows are all pretty much your peers as far as what they're doing versus what you're doing. And...
Were there many there from the chemical industry?
Not many. Almost none. I was about the only one. Except for Al Giacco of Hercules, who's another fellow that you might want to get on your list. He's now president of the company. But you ask about experiences there. There was a great deal of experience in living together. There was a great deal of politicking going on to determine who should be the president of the class and all of that sort of thing. My candidate, I was a campaign manager for my roommate who became president of the class, which is quite an interesting experience. And then for secretary, my candidate lost by one vote. So I didn't make out too well there.
Who was your candidate for president?
A chap by the name of Dick Duncan, who was at that time an executive vice president of Dun & Bradstreet.
Well, considering your earlier experiences, you were what, president of the student government
at college?
Way back in college. I'm thinking of you in terms of being a campaign manager for someone.
Well, yeah, I'd had some experience. I'd had a little experience. And that's right.
I take it then that you had quite a bit of interaction with the other people.
Oh, a great deal.
Did you all live in a dorm together?
We all lived in a dorm together, day and night, and weekends and the whole works. And worked hard. It was except for a few playboys, and very few, and I'm talking about maybe three or four at the most, who really didn't take it too seriously. They were a hard working gang with a lot of appreciation of what was going on. Profs were good. Really had a lot of respect for the professors, the fellows that taught the courses. They were excellent. Got to know them, became good friends with them. Became good friends with the dean, Larry Foraker. He was a great personality.
Well, were you in a...
Matter of fact,
I'm sorry.
Larry Foraker became enough interested in our matrix or MDO kind of organization that he reorganized the Harvard Business School pretty much on the basis of a matrix organization with cross relationships.
That's interesting. At the time that you were there in 65, where was the development of MDO in your mind? Its origins date before this.
Yes, its origins are before this. And I had established a talk with slides and appropriate visual aids to demonstrate what we're trying to do in the organizational setup, and used it there. And of course, when 4-Acre became interested in it, school became more interested in the whole thing. However, it wasn't until after I was with Dow Corning that I began to really lecture extensively on it by request at Harvard, at MIT, at Michigan, at Alma, places like that.
But at the time you were in the AMP program,
it was still in the formative stages. Yeah, it was developing.
Had it reached any kind of crystallization in your mind yet at that point?
Oh yeah, it was pretty well along. We were quite well satisfied that we were onto something in plastics at Dow, and we developed annual reports, annual 1 and 5 year plans, that sort of thing was used very extensively. I still have. This wouldn't be anything that this would be proprietary, but books about that thick of our annual plans and annual reports that we developed there. Fellows complained a little bit about having to do all the work, but after he got been through it about once or twice, well, it became pretty easily.
In that AMP program, were you in court classes all day long? How did they structure that?
No. Structure was usually three classes a day, two in the morning and one in the afternoon, one right after lunch, two in the morning, and then you had free time from about 2:30 or 3 o'clock on to try to catch up on your homework, and that wasn't adequate time. The workload was purposely overdone. I mean, there are probably fellows that could read it all the way through and get something out of it. As a matter of fact, in some of the subsequent courses, there were speed readers that were quite good at that, who could read through it fast enough to allow them some free time to bother other people.
And how many different Harvard faculty participated? Did you get a good broad spectrum of their faculty?
Well, we got a broad spectrum from the standpoint of their talents, but in terms of numbers of participants, probably 7 or 8 would handle the whole course. Maybe 9, but right around. It wasn't a very large number.
What time of the year was this? Was it in the summer? Or was it?
No, it was started in the winter. I think it started in not long after the first of the year. It was very lousy weather, I remember arriving out there, and carrying on through until May, I think.
Especially a spring semester term.
Right. It's a two-term affair. They have one term in the fall and one term in the spring. Once in a while they would run a summer program, but not too frequently.
It was shortly after this that you made the move to Dow Corning. Could you describe how that sequence of events took place leading up to the move?
Yeah. You want me to describe it by the way I've written it?
Well, that's part of Earl's material, isn't it? So we won't get a copy of that right now.
I'm sure you can have a copy of this. I don't think there's any question about that.
All right.
But let me just say that one day at the country club, Ted Doan suggested that I tell the Corning Glass people what the Plastics Organization was all about. I took a rather dim view of this, since Corning Glass was a prime example of a line and staff organization, and one that was established, well established. The change to an MDO doesn't seem very reasonable. I didn't react very quickly, and I soon learned that this was not a request but a command. So I promptly went to New York and made a presentation in the boardroom of the New York headquarters of Corning Glassworks. The presentation didn't go very well, as people kept wandering in and out of the meeting. Most of the Corning board members were there, however, and I was really discouraged by the time I'd finished. Later, Ben Branch, my boss, asked me to meet with Carl Gerstacker and Ted Doan in Branch's office. They said the meeting in New York had gone quite well, so well that they asked me to join Dow Corning as president. Again, this was not a request, but a command. This meeting took place in early August, and I was asked to make the change as quickly as practical. They hoped it could be accomplished by early September, so that there was not much time, and indeed it was. At that time, I knew very little about Dow Corning and had met some of the individuals only socially. I was concerned about the personnel and situation and wanted to take some of my people along with me. I had developed a number of very good people, and I was really pleased with them. I'd sure happy to take them along. I was told that I could have anyone I wanted so long as the person came from Dow Corning. But this proved to be a blessing in disguise, since there was a lot of talent, latent talent, within Dow Corning. And I had all the talent that I could possibly hope for right there. So that's the way the whole thing came about. And I moved over there in September. And Dr. Bass was very anxious to get things going as quickly as possible, make the changes necessary. The reasons for it were, I don't know whether I've seen this or not, but at the time of the board meeting, there were several reasons for considering additional personnel at Dow Corning. I later learned from board members that Dow Corning had inadequate financial controls, cumbersome communications, and not all divisions were communicating with one another, and there was not adequate vertical communication. The long-range planning was uncoordinated and totally insufficient. Competition was rough, and in 1967, profits were deteriorating enough so that the members of the board felt something should be done. Thus, the reason for the board's concern about getting a new president and reorganizing the situation at Dow Corning.
That takes care of several questions I had on my list, so it's...
I have a feeling that this write-up will take care of quite a lot of your questions.
Okay. All right. If I can get a copy of that, maybe we can...
It's hot on the computer right now.
we'll add that to the transcript as part of the...
Yeah, I think that's the best way to do it. Let me just ask for to run off another copy of this.
Okay.
I don't know whether, maybe the thing to do would be for you to read this, or do you want to try to go through it? How do you want to read it and then ask questions?
All right, maybe if I just quickly go through it,
I've gone about down to the bottom of the page.
Okay.
And ask questions as you go if you want. That might save us
all right
some fussing around. Go ahead.
when you started making, well, after you arrived at DCC, how soon did you start implementing these changes? And how long did it take before MDO was in effect?
Well, in one respect, I started right away because I started talking to various groups about the cradle, which is mentioned there, mm-hmm. and the principal things that were involved, like pushing management decisions down into, well, down at the organization, and communication in all directions and all this sort of thing. Then, as also was indicated there, slowly we went about the process of selecting business managers. We got economic evaluation started, which I felt was very important. We had no way of really communicating on an economic basis, so it was important to get that established. So, along with that, let's see, we established patterns for doing economic evaluation. I don't know whether those are things you're interested in or not, but
no, I think we should include them.
These aren't necessarily in order, but in order to establish a uniform economic language, we put together analyses like this. Which you can read pretty much on one page. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Why don't I give you this copy?
Okay, fine.
And I've got some marks on that copy that I want to keep.
Could we get a copy of that somewhere along the line?
Yeah, you can have those if you want them.
Okay, fine.
Would be better if we had these filled out in some exemplary pattern. Here's the first page. When I first arrived at Dow Corning, and at the early Dow Corning board meetings took 2 days originally. By the time we now run board meetings, they're done in 2 hours. And that's as a result of things like this, streamlining of the whole darn organization so that you can get everybody's talking a common language, they know what you're talking about, you don't have to go back and explain everything, you don't have to write a 2-volume book to get a $6 million authorization through. It's covered right there, black and white, enough so that if you have some knowledge of it, you can ask questions about it. But anyway, that's the way the whole thing is designed to work. Now, to get back to your question about how long it took to implement the whole pattern, I arrived there in 67, and by 70, 71, we were in pretty smooth running order.
You indicated that you had a lot of latent talent at Dow Corning. How did you identify that?
Well, I was very fortunate in having, as head of the personnel department, Jack Luddington. Jack is a graduate from Albion in economics, but his main interest is personnel. His main interest was, at that time, an interest in personnel. And so it was easy to go to Jack and say, look, who are the guys in this organization that are, say, engineers with an MBA degree? That's a perfect background for undertaking this economic evaluation kind of thing that we're interested in. So he was able to sort out about 20 fellows for the first group to start an economic evaluation program. And I brought over from Dow a real key man in our plastics department, who taught this class that Zacharias taught the class in economic evaluation, and then from there on with Steinhoff. I think I mentioned Steinhoff's name there someplace. Steinhoff was able to carry on later and help out with economic evaluation for subsequent groups, so that we didn't have to use a Dow man all that time for economic evaluation.
I'm intrigued by how one accomplishes making such major changes in such a short period of time in an organization. Did you meet much resistance, or was it people?
I think I've indicated there, or somebody indicated, maybe it was elsewhere in one of the writings, that one of the reasons that we could do this was because we knew it was going to be done. There wasn't any question about whether we were going to reorganize. We were going to do it, and do it in a fashion that was as pleasant and undisturbing as possible, and yet get the job done. So, sure, there was resistance, but there wasn't the violent kind of resistance that you'd expect if they didn't know that you're definitely going to go about accomplishing the task. So there was probably a little bit of dictatorship that was involved, too, as well as just planning and carrying it on.
And how did you, how should I put this, how did you reach the lower levels of the organization?
First, you got to convince the upper levels that they're in tune with what you want to do and that they're really supportive of it. And then they will go about convincing the lower levels. It worked that way very well. I didn't attempt to try to reach all levels and convince them, because just going through things like a credo of principles, you're just not going to sell people that way. They've got to live in it and be with it to get some impression of how the thing works. I'm just going to quote from this article here. Here's an article that appeared in 1978 from Business Week. But see if I can. Well, here, I'll let you read it. Do you want it on the microphone? On there?
Well, now let's
start right about here. I talked about Ed Steinhoff. This is also quoting him.
Okay. Just make a note of the. You can get a copy of this later. And
Lorsch
eventually did publish a book
and I thought I had that book. I've got one of their books, but I don't think it's the right one. They published quite a few books. They did publish a book on, not on this particular organization, but on their philosophy of management as this organization was related. They don't attempt to identify the organizations. It's quiet on that subject. But what they're talking about is the way this is run. So you get the idea of how you get, you prevent the buck from getting up in your lap.
Yes. That's interesting.
Here's another thing that pretty well describes the way I worked at the time.
Oh, yes, I have a copy of that.
Oh, do you? All right.
I think either you sent me that.
Maybe I sent you a copy of that.
You did, but we do have a copy.
All right.
Yes.
Okay. There's quite a lot of truth to that.
Do you still do that?
No. I don't do it now. Well, I'm not that busy.
We'll have to get you writing more history then.
Well, I've written quite a bit.
Yes.
I've got quite a lot more than that if you want it.
That's,
I don't recall what I sent you.
Well, I have my folder here. I have, I think, about this many pages of basic material, plus now what you have here.
Do you have...
One of the things I...
Do you have this one?
Yes. Yeah, I think that's the
All
one.
Right. Do you have...
Okay.
I added some other pages to that that I don't know that you have. I don't think I have, so I don't know whether I sent them to you or not.
Well, this looks pretty much like the non-Midland activities.
Try the last several pages there now.
Okay.
Right, starting, I think.
Now, this item we don't have.
Are you interested in those personal things?
Yes. Certainly we could get a copy of this to put it in the files. No, this we don't. No, this last part we don't have.
Well, that's the only copy that I've got. So, let's see. I don't know where it is on the computer. Oh, maybe I indicated it here. Read on 81286. Let me just...
I was interested in this, just as an aside, in this one statement about the... the fact that you had changed from coal to gas, so the union didn't realize the plant was operating during the strike.
Yeah. The other thing that the union thought was that we were letting air out of the tires so that it looked like the trucks were going out loaded instead of empty.
That's interesting. Had as many as 4,000 products one time.
Tremendous number. Just impossible to deal with. So the big new development program was to get rid of products. That was one of the more painful things. Because, you know, people have got their own babies that they think should be protected regardless.